do that liminal field cognition. Let's just take a moment.
Sahanavavatu, sahanavunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
So now in this section of the Tetra Buddha, Sukshma Shariram Kim, they choose to go through right now of this definition in terms of the different 17 components of the Sukshma Sharira. They're really only doing right now, they'll pick up the rest later, the five Jnanendriyas, the Panchajnanendriyas, the five sense organs, the Panchakarmendriyani, the five organs of action we've done, and then the Panchapranadiya. So the five pranas, it says, and then there's the mind of the Buddha. They will do that later. So here we just, yesterday finished up the last samana, the last of the five pranas. And then this last section, on the last sentence on the top of page 22, is also making a statement that will be dealt with later. But I'm going to tell you about it and tell you where it fits in the scheme of things. So here, etat, this, Pranadi Panchakam. This Panchakam is a group of five, it's consisting of five Panchakam, beginning with prana. So this fivefold group of five, beginning with prana. So that would be prana, apana, dhyana, vidana, samana, which we've just been through. So it says, this group of five pranas, akash adi gata, Raja Ampsha Ebiha. So Rajampsha is from Rajas, and then Ampsha. So the Rajas Ampsha, from the Rajas Ampsha, Milite Ebiha, all taken together, Utpadyate. So let's just get the basic sentence. Etat Pranadi Panchakam. This group of five pranas, of the pranadi panchakam, of the five pranas, at the go to the end, utpadyate, is born, go reading backwards, milite bhyaha. Milita is like a group or a conglomerate or a number of things put together. So if we just take it from the a collective group, so this fivefold prana, beginning with prana, etc., is born from the collective group of the, and now this is adjectival, from the collective group, which is comprised of the rajas amsha, from the collective of the rajas part, right? Akash adi gataha, residing in the five elements beginning with akasha. Literally it says, situated in gata, is meaning for gata, many meanings for gata. So that which is situated in or abiding in akasha, etc. Akashadi. Akasha is the first element. So here, there's something that has not been dealt with, and this is probably because it's a little section. This is a section added from the Vedanta Sara. But just to make this, just to say a few words about this, and we'll see it unfolded later. When we talk about Maya, this Maya, what is Maya? Well, they'll say Maya is sattva, rajas, and tamas. Mean Maya consists of these three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Okay. Sattva is just briefly that which reflects or manifests awareness, that part of the Maya that manifests awareness. It's called sattva. Rajas is the activity principle, right? And tamas is what brings about the grossification, what allows grossification or nama-rupa or something holding in place like this body would be a manifestation of the tamas aspect of the five subtle elements that have gone through a process of grossification. So what allows for nama-rupa, for objects, you know, for this to actually, this creation to take an actual form, space, air, fire, water, earth, and all of the elementals to actually have a form, to be, have some sort of substance, some sort of feeling of reality to them. So now, when we're going to get into the how this creation from this Maya in unmanifest condition, in its karana sharira, in its causal state, when that creation, when the Maya comes into manifestation, it comes into this, and think of Maya only as sattva, rajas, and tamas. It's nothing else. It's sattva, rajas, and tamas, and these gunas, we call, are interacting with each other. When they're in causal state, they're in what's called a sema avasta. They're just abiding there without any activity, just in their causal state. But when they come into manifestation, how do they come into manifestation? How does Maya, so how does sattva, rajas, and tamas come into manifestation? Well, they come into manifestation initially as the Mahabhutas, as the five subtle elements, space, air, fire, water, earth. But this is sattva, rajas, and tamas, these three gunas coming into manifestation as the five elements, beginning with space, air, fire, water, earth, in that order. We'll have a reason for that order. We'll do that later. That means that space has, because it's, if you go back to Maya as its material cause, it is going to have a sattvic element, a rajasic, a rajas element, right, and a tamas element. So all of them, space, air, fire, water, earth, have these three gunas, right? And so space, each one of them will have a sattvic expression, a rajasic expression, and also a tamasic expression. So because sattva reflects consciousness, its expression would be the mind, and the antakaran, and the sense organs, because they're sattva. They're made of sattva. They enjoy consciousness. Right? The rajasic element, right? The rajas would be the prana, activity, and the karmendriyas, your organs of action. You'll get this in detail later, but I kind of just want you to, I think it might be good just to kind of have a general understanding of this. So it'll have a rajasic element, would be the karmendriyas, the organs of action, and the five pranas. Right. So the word prana actually includes the five pranas. Yeah. And then the tamas aspect, of the five subtle elements is that which goes through this process of becoming fivefold to become the stula sharira in the physical universe. And so that's what we just have to understand now. There's maya, is the word yama iti maya, that which is not. That is what we call maya. So there's a real play on words there, that which is not. It has no independent reality whatsoever. And that is what we call maya because we experience it. We don't give a name to something that we don't experience unless we're talking about, we give a name to the fact that there is such a thing as tucham, which means it has no reality, it has no being, it offers no experiences, absolute non-existence. So we have a concept for that, but it's not something you can experience. You have to kind of experience, think of the absolute non-existence of everything. And of course that vritti is existing in conscious being. So it's very difficult, but it's just a useful concept. Okay? But when we talk about satyam and mithya, those are ontological orders of reality, as is tucham, where satyam is talking about that which is ever present. It's free from time. It is never, it cannot be destroyed in past, present, or future. It is always present in past, present, and future. It is free of time. It's the very presence of time. That is satyam. It doesn't have a beginning or end. It hasn't been born in it, and it doesn't die. Okay? And it doesn't go out of its existence. This satyam, this is going to become a very important understanding in terms of the understanding of mithya. So we'll be doing this many times. I'm just going to state it now. You've heard it many times. Something that comes into being and goes out of being, right, is bordered on either side by non-existence. If we say it came into being, that means it wasn't before. It's come into being, right? This has gone out of being. So, in fact, nothing can be born from non-existence. So it's not that from non-existence something came into being, because non-existence is not there for something to come into being from it. And therefore, because of that, and the whole universe is subject to this analysis, the whole universe, everything in it, comes into being and goes out of being. And therefore, that's enough. It's mithya. Because it can't come from non-existence. It has to have an adhishtana. It has to have something, has to be there, which allows it to come into being. And so what is the adhishtana of this creation is something in the end, the adhishtana means the actual thing that is there, that the mithya depends upon for its being. It itself can't come into being and going out of being, because then it too is mithya. Then we have an infinite regress into mithya, and at the bottom of the mithya, the adhishtana is non-existence, which means we have nothing here. So if you say, what's at the bottom of this whole creation that we're experiencing that comes, and everything in it that comes into being and goes out of being, at the basis of it all, is tucham, is non-existence, means that's the material cause, the ultimate. Everybody bring their dogs. We're allowed to bring our dogs, and they will harmonize the situation. They will be the continuing music.
It's the food delivery.
Yeah.
It's the food delivery.
Hopefully. They didn't find the place. They're sitting at that.
Oh, it's
a gas. It's a gas.
Oh, it's in the line.
It's the gas line.
The internet.
Not the internet.
That's the line. That's
Touching. Please don't break my internet.
Did you say, I'm not sure if I heard it, I'm just contemplating, something that comes into being is bordered by non-existence?
Yes,
non-existence.
Non-existence.
Bordered.
When it comes into being, what was it before it came, what was there before it came into being?
Oh, yeah.
Right? So if you say nothing, it was non-existent before it came into being, Hello. Somebody needs something. Oh, it's the dog?
The dog. I go and get something.
What do they need?
I don't know what they're supposed to do. Maybe, I know you can't.
They might be afraid of the...
Yeah,
he's holding his hand up like that. Why don't you just check? We'll just take a little.
Yeah.
Have a little satsang in the meantime. Sometimes when I'm having a class at the farm and I'm doing a guided meditation that's online, you know, so there's maybe 20 people listening or something. You know. And then when Lucky was around with us, he would be lapping up his water. Making all kinds of noises. And now Shweta is making himself comfortable on the chair and then chomping on something if I gave him a chew stick. Chomping on that and jumping up on my lap and getting over on here. And everybody's hearing. So everybody said to kind of include the animals in the meditation. And once in a while, this will happen. Even it happens alone with Shweta now. It was Lucky and Shweta Isuru. Really happened. And then eventually I'd realize that they're not really behaving, and so I'd have to take them off outside. And they'd sit at the window, you know, the sliding window, and they'd sit there looking in. Very patiently. They'd just sit there. Sometimes if they got a rambunctious again, especially, I would take them and put them both in my room, which is off, you know, to the side. And they would just sit quietly, actually, in the room and just wait, looking at the door until I came to get them. There are two terms. This is not the class. This is just satsang going to Sky's question. The understanding of the different areas where we have different words for different types of non-existence, right? So if we're talking about non-existence in relationship to something that comes into being, its previous condition is called prak abhava. Non-existence prak before. So prakabhava, right? And then there is, when it goes out of being, there's what we call pradvamsa bhava. That's what happens when something dies or ends. It's being ends. So now on this side, there's pradvamsa abhava. Abhava means being. Abhava being means non-being, non-existence. So something comes into being. It's bordered on the one side by prior non-existence, prak. That's in English how we translate prior non-existence. And on the end side, it's called posterior non-existence for Dharamsapala. So this is also there in the Panchadashi, and also there in the Kadika of the Mandukya Upanishad. These bhavas in the Panchadashi, they talk about it, the bhavas. Swamiji always teaches them, what are the abhavas? Different types of non-existence. It's important to define that because of the impossibility of there being a prak abhava of something, as though its prior condition was non-existent. Its prior condition is not there for it to give birth to anything else. And so that becomes a prakriya, a teaching for really understanding the nature of mithya. Right, mithya. Because it can't be real. Now, what do we mean by that? It can't have independent being. If something has independent being, it's just satyam, paramarthika satyam, then you could never say that it has a prakabhava, a prior non-existence, and a posterior non-existence, because that's an impossibility for something to come out of nothing. And so when we give the definition of Brahman in terms of its ontological reality, we say that which is not, which is, but is not subject to past, present, or future. So it has no destruction. It's in it. It was not destroyed in the past. Can't be destroyed in the future. That cannot be destroyed in the present. So they put it in the negative. You can also put in the positive that which is past, present, and future. That which cannot be negated in past, present, or future. That which has no prakabhava, prior non-existence, no posterior non-existence. That simply is. That such a thing is free from time. So that Brahman, which has this Paramarthika Satyam, this absolute reality, cannot be an object within time. It can't be an object that exists within the creation, because in the creation, everything that changes, even the slightest change makes it mitya right there. Because that slight change wasn't there before. And when that change takes place, even as the most minuscule change, right, then what was there for that moment is no longer there. So this prakabhava and padvamsabhava, you know, is something that is applied to the most minute change, the longest lasting change, the slow motion change, all of it. Padvamsa means that which has no padvamsabhava, right, has no posterior existence. So I don't know that that gets into this in the Tattva Buddha or not. But it's important, just one of the important teachings for understanding what we mean by mithya. You can understand it in terms of time, you know, that which comes into being and goes out of being. That's understanding mithya in terms of time. You can understand something as mithya in terms of space. Space means it takes up whatever it is, it exists in space, it takes up space. You can't have something that exists in space that doesn't take up space or isn't differentiated by something else. It's another way of saying it. But that thing, whatever it may be, if it is differentiated by something else, then is that thing that is differentiated by something else a thing, actually a thing? So is that thing, if differentiated by something else, is that actually a thing? And we would say, no. Why? Because it's divisible. If it exists in space, it is divisible. And that alone makes it a conglomerate. There is something which it is not also. Like space also is part of a conglomerate of space, air, fire, water, earth. There's something it is not. That very fact circumscribes it and means it can be divisible, differentiated. Also, you can be without space, all of these types of things. So in reference to time and in reference to space, in reference to its relationship with non-existence, coming into being and going out of being, that gives it the qualification of mithya. So every way you look at it in the creation is mithya. So, let's go back to where we are. Okay. So, now, what I was saying is that if we look at the whole creation, right, as coming into manifestation, that material cause of the creation itself is called Maya. That Maya is what's said to be the cause of all what we call parinamas, all of the modifications. So this display, which is an infinite display of modifications of nama rupas, etc. It is also an infinite display of sattva, rajas, and tamas. There is an intelligent principle, there is an active principle, and there is the tamas, which allows for the differentiation between the gross, the stula sharira in individually or collectively, and the sukshma sharira, individually or collectively. We can say, well, this is my body, and then my mind, sense organs are subtle. We can have a sukshma sharira because that is the ungrossified, the ones that have not gone through panchikarana, you know, that are able to transmigrate. And then those that have gone through panchikarana, those are the physical bodies, the world that we experience through our sense organs, and they come into being and go out of being. But they die. Okay? The sukshma sharira doesn't die, it continually changes though. Right? It's continually changing its form. Your mind is continually changing its form, your sense organs are continually changing form on a subtle level and on a physical level. It just doesn't go, the subtle doesn't go through birth and death. And so here, when we say, he's bringing this up out of order, right? So when he says, this prana, the pranas, the five pranas, they are born of the rajas part of the five elements. So that's what I was trying to explain. What do they mean by the rajas part of the five elements? It's that when the creation manifests from maya, maya itself is sattva, rajas, tamas. So when the five elements come into manifestation, they come into manifestation with a sattva, rajas, tamas element. And so each one of those has to be defined. He's not bringing that in here, but in this little section, he just made this one little thing, one little comment. But just to prepare you, just so that you're thinking about this, because we'll be going into this in a lot of depth later, is that if we look at the antakarna, the mind, and the five sense organs, okay, the five sense organs and the mind are going to be made of the sattva aspect of the five subtle elements, because they reflect consciousness. They're the intelligent principle, sattva, right? But as we'll see, the five sense organs, each one will be have for its material cause, in terms of the maya, the sattva aspect of one of the elements. For instance, the ears will be this, have for its material cause the sattva aspect of space. And the sense of touch would be made of the sattva aspect of vayu, etc., like that. But then the collective of all of them, of all of the sattva aspects, would be the mind, the antakarana. That would be all five of them put together. Here in the prana, he's saying all five collectively are called the prana, whereas each one of the five elements, the rajas aspect of the five elements, would represent one of the karmendriyas, which would, of course, would also be of rajas, because activity. So, for instance, vak, speech, would have its material cause, in terms of maya, be the rajas element of space, hearing. Counterpart of hearing. I think that's right. I'm going to get confused. But anyway, I will be in detail going through creating this scaffolding. Right? It's a big scaffolding. It's kind of interesting to do it without a little chart. Sometimes we have a physical chart that can be helpful. But otherwise, it's going to be a really wonderful exercise in remembering details, holding them all in your mind as we go through them. Just telling you. So we have just a little tiny experience of it here when it says the collective rajas element of the five, the collective rajas of the five elements, so the five elements together, right, will make up the pranas. So anyway, giving a little taste of that. Let's go on to the third sharira, karana sharira. So let me see. Yeah, just read this one section, and then we'll do the next.
Karana shariram kim.
Karana shariram kim.
Anirvachanadi.
Anirvachanadi.
Avidyarupam.
Avidyarupam.
Shariratvayasya.
Shariratvayasya.
Karanam matram.
Karanam Matram
Satsvarupa Jnanam
Satsvarupa Jnanam
Nirvikalpa Karupam
Nirvikalpa Karupam
Yadasti
Yadasti
Tatkarana Shariram
Tatkarana Shariram.
So this paragraph just defines in itself the Karana Sharira, causal body. So we have a Stula Sharira, physical body, Sukshma Sharira, subtle body, Karana Sharira, causal body. These three bodies, okay, that make up the body, mind, sense organs of the jiva. It's divided now into three. Later we'll divide it into five. There's different ways of doing it. So here's the definition for this causal body. Anirvachya anadi avidya rupam. It's one definition. We would say tat karana shariram, that is the karana shariram whose nature is anirvachya, inexplicable, that which cannot be categorized easily or defined. Anirvachya, it is anadi. Adi means beginning. Anadi, beginningless. It is beginningless. It has no beginning. And it's avidya. So the karana sharira has for its nature avidya. Avidya, ignorance, which is beginningless. And inexplicable, something that cannot be categorized as sat or asat. Remember the definition, one definition of mithya is sad asad bhyam anirvachaniya. Anirvachaniya. That's the same as this anirvachya. Same root. So avidya also is mithya. You can't say that it's sat. You certainly can't say that it's asat, that it's not here. We'll go on to see why. So this, the karana sharira is avidya, is ignorance, which is not, cannot be defined or categorized as absolutely real, as sat, paramarthika satyam, nor as tucham, as completely non-existent, because it has capacities. Avidya has capacities. It has capacities like if you are walking along and you see the shape and form of a rope. You see that it's got three bends and it's an inch and a half in diameter, but you miss the ropeness. You have an experience plus a jnanam of the experience. And that jnanam of the experience allows for the projection, the manifestation of a snake, which is mithya. It has no being apart from the rope at all, but there it is. And we respond to it, we react to it. And here there is avidya. It's avidya of something which is known to me. This is something to understand about the avidya, which is the troublemaker. Swamiji will joke and say, you know, absolute avidya is fine, no problem. There's no subject-object relationship. There's no one to get in trouble there. The whole thing is in unmanifest condition. And there is no problem. But when you are experiencing something and you don't know what that is, then you will project something upon that experience. And that's where you give that it's called vikshepa. That projecting power is what we call vikshepa. So avidya itself, we say it has a covering power because you don't see the rope. If you saw the rope, there would be no vikshepa. There would be no projection. And so if you saw the rope as a rope, if you didn't see the rope at all, there's only the avarana, it's just not there in your purview, so there is no response to it whatsoever. But if you experience the rope, but not as a rope, like the length of it, the bends of it, etc., then you project something on it, avarana, vikshepa, both qualities of avidya are there. So if avidya, even though it's mithya, it's inexplicable, you can say, well, avidya is like this or like this or like this. You can't say it's satyam and you can't say it's tucham. This avidya is something which has tremendous power, right? And so it is positive. It's not just the absence of something. It is not just the absence of knowledge. It's that which covers an experience and allows for the projection. This will be significant also when we get into the way knowledge takes place. So it's anirvacha, inexplicable. Anadi, just think about this, anadi, why they say anadi, beginningless. What would be the prior condition of avidya? What would it be? What would the prior condition be? That means you would have had the experience of the thing, what it is. Jnanam. Say you saw the rope as a rope. Then where is the avidya? The avidya is gone. So the avidya is something which comes to an end. That's what also what makes it maya. It's not like Brahman has no beginning. It is free from time in terms of the, on the past side, there's no beginning. And there's no beginning on the future side either. But avidya is different. On the past side, it has no beginning. But on the present end, going forward, it does come to an end. And it comes to an end through knowledge. Right? So it makes it kind of a magical, something magical in a sense. We experience it, and we have to say we experience. There's no way, otherwise you have to know everything, right? And you don't know everything. But you also experience gaining knowledge, and when you have knowledge of something, that avidya is no longer there, right? And so here, what's especially important about avidya in reference in the karana sharira, it is a sharira that is part of this jiva. We'll get into that in a minute. It's really the core of the jiva, because there's avidya of your own nature, self-ignorance, you know? I have self-ignorance, so I want self-knowledge. But I have self-ignorance not of something that is completely unknown. If there was complete self-ignorance, it'd never even dawn on me. Like Swamiji used the example of a black hole. The teacher comes and you've never heard of a black hole. You have no clue what it is. It's never been a problem at all. And it still won't be because you're fine not knowing about it. Yeah? But the teacher comes, you have a science class, and the teacher introduces that there is such a thing as black hole and then teaches you all about it. Well, you've never taken yourself to be a black hole. You know? It's a total non-issue. You're just gaining knowledge. There's no viveka involved or aviveka. There's no discrimination involved here or lack of discrimination. But here, in reference to yourself, you're much more like the rope snake. In the sense that you are a conscious being. This, your own presence as me, is absolutely known to everyone, whether you have language or you don't have language, whether you're a little one or an adult or an elderly person. The sense of me is there, as I am a conscious being, whether you label it or not. I am here, you know? And then the question comes, here I am. I am this me, this person that is here that I know very well as me. Who am I? Okay, there's the ajnanam right there. Here's the self-experience, and then the question, who am I really? Am I really one with this body and so therefore subject to birth and death like the body is? Am I really like the subtle body or just my mind, you know, which then is sometimes utilizing this body and utilizing the sense organs and has a life of its own, which I really don't have any control over. You know, otherwise I would always be happy, you know. I wouldn't be depressed or agitated or have to deal with all of the emotional spectrum that is really painful for me. Is that who I am, really? Or am I something which is free of these shariras, free of these different upadis? Who am I? But I'm not saying, who am I, like, who is the black hole? I'm saying, who am I, this person that is there, and this person who stands before you, who's come to you as my guru, you know, please teach me. You have, you know, like the Asishas climbing up all the mountains and going through all kinds of, takes a lot of time and a lot of effort to find his way. The teacher is way up there on the top of the hill somewhere, and finally makes it there, pranams. It says, I've come to ask you, Bhagavan, please teach me, Who am I? Who is this person? Who am I really, this person that stands here before you? Right? So this is the ajnanam that every jiva suffers from because instead of knowing myself as the infinite, non-dual, free from time, but very source of ananda, nothing will ever happen to me, never has happened to me, never can happen to me. Instead of knowing myself as to be everything, that my nature to be everything I'm seeking for in the world, the ananda I'm looking for in the world, that is myself. Instead of having that knowledge, I have that beloved, the self-experience of myself as the most dear, who is subject to multi-levels of change and change from my nature at all times. My body is changing, the pranas are changing, I'm healthy, I'm sick. I'm happy, I'm sad. You know? I'm angry, I'm frustrated. On and on and on. I have a partner, I don't have a partner. You know? Even in terms of your relationships. These are all points of identification, you know. I'm young, I'm old. On and on. Every moment there's a point of identification based upon the relationship, your health, etc., that you find yourself in. And those points of identification are continually shifting. Sukha dukkha, some indifference. Shifting all of the time. So, I don't know who I am. And if I ever would have known who I was, it would be like gaining knowledge, having knowledge of the rope and trying to make a snake appear upon it. It can't happen. Say for teachers, say if you're teaching the snake about the snake rope, or even if it's giving self-knowledge, you cannot get back to that prior condition when you didn't know. You can't do it. You can't even really remember it. Let alone make that real for you. It'd be like, okay, you took the snake for a rope, and now you see the rope. The snake isn't even there. And you say, just so I can teach you properly, let me try to imagine that snake back on that rope. It's not, absolutely not possible. You can't bring the ajnanam back. Ajnanam comes to an end with knowledge. And there's no problem teaching about it because it's such a phenomena. You remember the whole thing. You just can't reproduce it in actuality. It's the same with yourself. Yourself is taken to be these upadis, this body, mind, sense organs, until it's not. And once it's not, you really can't get that back. You know? It takes a while. There's an emotional lag time for some of the habits of the mind to drop off. But all the while where you're acting out these ignorant ways, you still know yourself, you know? And you know why you're doing that. You have to say, you have to just keep bringing the mind home. It's okay, it's okay. Anyway, okay, so. Anirvachya, anadi avidya rupam. That is the nature of this karana sharira. It is sharira dvayasya karana matram. This karana sharira, one of the reasons it's called a sharira, is when it's in its causal condition, which is just that pure ajnanam, which is just the other side of maya. We'll talk about that later. It is causal to the other two shariras. And so that is its function. That's why we call it a sharira. When the mind goes into causal condition, for you also the body is in causal condition, your experience of the world is in causal condition, because the sense organs and mind are not available. You know, so from the standpoint of knower known, the knower known itself, this duality, this vikalpa, subject-object knower known, is in causal condition. It's not there. And so we say that this causal condition is the causal condition of both shariras, the stula sharira and the sukshma sharira, because you have no experience of them when you're in deep sleep. That's the idea there. And so this causal condition, this sharira, is really the causal condition of the sukshma sharira and the stula sharira. Why? Because they go into this condition and they come out of it. You know, it's not like they're becoming that they're becoming nirvikalpa. They're not there for experience. They're dead. They're gone. No, they're not dead. They're not gone. They're just in a causal condition, which then when the mind wakes up, the same mind comes up back, the same memories come back, the same relations come back, the same relationship with the supadhi, the stula sharira comes back. So we say that this karana sharira is really called that as a sharira because it's causal to the body, mind, sense organs experience, the stula sharira and the sukshma sharira. So karana matra means this is solely what it is, merely, solely, simply. It is simply causal to these two shariras because the causal sharira remains when you're in deep sleep. And the body, mind, sense organs are in causal condition. That's just simple. Then what is this karana sharira about? It's already called avidya. Avidya, vidya means knowledge. Jnanam is a synonym of vidya. So you hear both jnanam, vidya. So you hear avidya, you hear ajnanam. There's no real difference between the two. You know, in some instances we can differentiate them. I'll tell you about that later. But for the most part, they're just used as synonyms. So what does it say here? Sat swarupa ajnanam. This karana sharira is ajnanam of this one's own swarupa, one's own nature, which is satyam, which is sat, trikala abhadita satyam, that which can't be negated in past, present, or future. So the ajnanam that you have in terms of needing to have self-knowledge is knowledge of the self that you are. And the nature of yourself is something which is free from time. Sat swarupa ajnanam. And it is nirvikalpaka rupa. Its nature is... Who's there? Its nature is nirvikalpa. Nirvikalpa. When we say nirvikalpa, it means vikalpa, without vikalpa. Vikalpa means any type of duality. And here, we are usually, when we say that, like nirvikalpa samadhi, or any type of knower known duality. Can be nirvikalpa and vikalpa can be talked about in many different ways. Like I can divide this thing can be viewed as one thing or being divided. If it's divided, there's vikalpa there. If it's not divided, it's nirvikalpa. But when we're talking about nirvikalpa, we are talking primarily about the absence of that seer seeing, knower known relationship. So in nirvikalpa samadhi, there is no dvaita there. There is no seer seeing, knower known experience. There is just the knownness, the self-evident nature of my being without any type of dvaita. But here, in ajnanam, in the karana sharira, there is also nirvikalpa. In the causal body, there is no seer seen, knower known duality. So it also is nirvikalpa. Just think here, like in the dreams, in the waking state and dream state, you're identified with a character. You know the dream, or you know what is going on in the dream. There's this seer seen duality, knower known in both waking and dream. But in the deep sleep state, in the karana sharira, that's all in causal condition. There is no one commenting on the deep sleep state while it is occurring. You know, it's a lazy man samadhi. There's no vikalpa in it at all. It just and that's why it's so enjoyable, because there is no experience of any of your problems. None of them. They're all in unmanifest condition, and so you can. It's a really Bhagavan gave us this. It's not. There's a pure ajnanam. And you have the best time because nobody is interrupting or causing problems for you, and you're not causing problems for yourself either. That's why it is just the most wonderful time out. There's your being, the Satchitatma, the Satchitananda Atma is there, and the Ajnanam. So the Ajnanam takes all of the problems of the world away, and it's just your being with the Ajnanam, which is causal to the two other bodies. No problem. Totally ignorance is bliss. So nirvikalpa rupam. So here yadasti, there's things which fit the anirvacha anadi avidya rupam sharira dvayasya karana matram satsvarupa agnanam nirvikalpaka rupam yadasti. That which is all of these things, that is what we call the karana sharira. Okay. So these three shariras, as we do the viveka, that viveka jnanam has to differentiate the atma, you know, we have to differentiate the atma from each one of these shariras. So each one has to be known in depth so that we can recognize that, yes, we're not any of those things. The atma doesn't fit in, is not, the nature of myself is not defined by any of these three shariras. Okay. So next class we'll go into the avastatraya. Sakshi was beautiful also. Oh, that's it. That's it.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
What's our schedule this afternoon tonight?
Oh yeah, so we have the big group share.